Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are asking the question, is lifestyle creep inevitable?
Yeah, man, this episode is going to be all about lifestyle creep, which is, you know, the way we see it, lifestyle creep is this unconscious, continual upgrading of our lifestyle, where it ends up costing us money. And I've got a good quote here from the book Sapiens that kind of speaks to the danger of lifestyle creep. And the author talks about how that we've got these luxuries, right? And they tend to become necessities and spawn new obligations. And so once people get used to a luxury, they take it for granted, then they count on it, and then finally, they can't live without it. And we all know that when you can't live without something, that means you're paying for it. It's something that you've absorbed into your budget. And so that's why we're talking about lifestyle creep today.
Yeah, lifestyle creep is a huge problem. And I think it's something that, you know, we need to shine a light on. Because like you said, Matt, it can be done unconsciously. Most of the time, it's not like a choice on purpose. It is just going with the flow. And right. Going with the flow can ruin our finances. But before we get to that, Matt, let's talk about pets for a second.
You want to know what the best pet is, Joel?
What's the best pet?
A free pet.
I'm not gonna disagree with that. I feel like, yeah, paying money for pets is also overrated.
When there are lots of animals out in the wild that you could capture.
Adopt a bobcat.
Squirrels, for instance. No. I will say, so recently we caught a tree frog. There's a, is it the American, North American tree frog? You know, like the little green frogs.
Yeah.
You can find them stuck to your house. Well, that is exactly what we did. We found one of those jokers stuck to the house. I was with the kids. We caught it. You know, they were looking at it and I was getting ready to let it go. When you get the inevitable, can we keep it? And I was about to say no, because that's my default, right? Just no. Sometimes I'm kind of a wet blanket, right? But then I thought, you know, why not? Why not keep it? And so we kind of had a little project. We got a little empty tank down from the attic. We created a little terrarium, created a habitat for the frog. And it was a lot of fun. And specifically, man, what I enjoyed was the fact that we were able to teach the kids that having a pet requires work, right? And so we looked up not only what its habitat was supposed to be like, but also what it eats. And so we've spent the past few days now capturing different little bugs and moss that we would, you know, throw into the tank, and which is totally cool, watching the frog like hunt down a moth and like gobble it up and eat it. Yeah, I feel like we're doing it right. But I feel like the best part of a free pet is that, you know, since it's a wild frog, we can go into the backyard and let it free, and it can just resume its natural life, not being stared at by all of my kids. And so that just struck me, because oftentimes we have to learn that lesson in a more expensive way, right? Like, so say you get a pet, like a dog or something like that. Well, if you realize that having a pet isn't for you, right, because of the responsibility, I mean, oftentimes it's left to the parents, right? Like, it's first it was the job of the kids to go take the dog for a walk, and now you're the one picking up the poop, right? So it takes a lot more time and effort and work, I think, than kids realize. But for us, man, it's been a way for us to learn some of those lessons, for us to teach those lessons to our kids without taking on a large amount of responsibility or having to spend a lot of money as well.
There you go. And I think that's a great idea. So I guess now my kids want a pet, and they're asking me about
they want the pony, right?
Yeah, they want a pony, or and I'm like, well, that's definitely not gonna happen. A dog or a cat or something like that. And one thing actually that you just made me think of is a lot of people did get a pet during the pandemic. Pandemic puppies were a real thing, but now a lot of those people are going back to work in person, and so some of them are realizing that they're not gonna be able to keep this dog on hand any longer. So for some of the families out there who do want a dog, yeah, that might be a good place to turn, like your neighborhood Facebook association or even the Humane Society, because chances are you can get a really great dog for next to nothing these days, if that's what you're into. I'm still going to try to hold my kids off. Maybe we'll catch a frog ourselves or something.
Plus, I like the idea, too, of adopting a dog in your neighborhood. Like, you know, they have to go back to work or whatever. They realize that they're not cut out for dog life. Something about that dog being able to walk the same streets that it used to walk makes me happy inside.
Yeah, keeping it in the same hood. I like that.
Yeah, also, I had another idea, too, which is you ought to like look at getting like alpacas or something like that. You could have your own little farm, and then you could have like a little side hustle where your girls are taking these alpacas and maybe emus or something to like neighborhood birthday parties. What do you think about that?
It might be easier to start with like chickens and selling the eggs. It might be a simpler pet, but
I like it.
They're not very cuddly, though, the chickens.
That's true.
From what I hear. Well, For now, let's mention the beer we're having on the show. This one's called Hobnail. It's by Urban Artifact, and it's a blueberry sour. Big thanks to listener Sandra for sending this one our way. We'll give our thoughts on this one at the end of the episode. But Matt, let's get to the subject at hand. We are talking about lifestyle creep. Is it inevitable? And speaking of frogs, it just made me think that we've all heard the boiling frog in water experiments.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah.
We've all heard about that. We were all probably taught that in elementary school or whatever. Basically, like a frog who's tossed into a boiling pot of water. Supposedly, they're supposed to hop out immediately, right? But if you put that same frog in a vat of cool water and you slowly turn up the temperature, supposedly they get boiled to death, right? Like they're just not smart enough to hop out as the water continues to increase.
That is the urban legend.
Yeah.
Turns out frogs just don't know how to relax in a hot tub. Right?
Chill out, guys. But yeah, I feel like that's such a good analogy, even though I think from what I've read, that's not scientifically accurate.
Okay.
It's like a old wives' tale that we've been taught. But that same sentiment is true when it comes to our personal finances. It's a good analogy of what lifestyle creep does to us as we get complacent. We can easily be like that frog who's tossed into this nice cool pot of water, and then the temperature just slowly increases. We have a hard time recognizing that fact. And then similarly, we have a hard time putting our finger on how our expectations of what normal spending looks like change over time. We have a hard time recognizing that in ourselves, but over time, it has a really adverse impact on our spending and on our ability to like save and make progress with our personal finances.
I feel like this is another argument for having a detailed zero-sum budget, Joel, that you can look back on, because I can look back and see in 2008, how much did we used to spend in entertainment? What are we spending now? And kind of like slap myself upside the face, right? But I mean, it's true though. You know, like we want to be able to take a step back and recognize that, in the example that you gave, that the temperature is slowly cranking up when it comes to our personal finances. It really does seem like we spend more money on everything than we used to. And I feel like I can say that's true about myself. And, you know, sure, this does have something to do with inflation, but we're also just consuming more goods. We're paying more for quote unquote luxury goods and services. And generally, I think we are just wanting more as well. Our sense of what is normal has changed over the years, and it's incredibly hard for us to see it when we're living life in the day to day. So that's, you know, on this episode, we're going to focus on the topic of lifestyle creep and how you can combat it in your life, because it's crucial if you want to acquire more financial freedom, right? It's hard to have a handle on your personal finances if your expenses continue to climb year after year unchecked.
Yeah, so let's give kind of like some maybe societal examples of how Americans in general have inflated their lifestyles over the years. I think this definitely points to the problem. It shines a light on it. So like maybe what was normal for our grandparents' generation is basically not even close to normal these days.
Seriously. You must be broke if you're living like the way your grandparents used to live.
Right, exactly.
That's the general attitude towards it.
Yeah. And in some ways, like the progress we've been able to make, the ways that we're able to live better is a good thing. But in other ways, we should strive maybe to live a little bit more like our grandparents, or at least understand that it's possible to live that way.
Sure.
Like, for instance, let's talk about housing. The prevailing narrative is that homes cost more than what your grandparents had to spend. You know, you hear that stat, your grandparents' house cost $25,000 or something, and you're like, boy, they sure had it easy back then.
$7,000, yeah.
Yeah. But inflation is obviously, like you said, Matt, one reason that homes cost more these days. But it's not even close to the only explanation, because the median house size in, let's say, 1950 was like 953 square feet. And by 1980, the average home size in our country was closer to 1,500 square feet.
Right.
And now, in the year 2021, homes are on average 2,700 square feet.
Wow.
So that's some serious lifestyle creep right there. That's not just inflation. That's the fact that we want more and more, and we want bigger houses.
And not to mention, too, parents are having fewer kids. And so, like, they had those smaller houses back then,
right,
when there were more kids in the household, and now there are fewer kids, but way more space.
That's right. More square footage per person by far. And so, yeah, not to mention, too, the fancy stuff we're filling our homes with, even refrigerators with TV screens like on them. It's just kind of all, when you look at it, it's like that points to a whole lot of lifestyle creep there.
Yeah, well, speaking of TVs, let's talk about how many TVs the average household has. Nielsen reports that the average household has 2.5 TVs, but 31% of folks have 4 or more TVs. That's way more than we have, dude.
That's a lot of TVs.
I mean, in my mind, like, why do you need more than a singular TV? Like, you've got the big one TV, you know, that you all, like, sit down and watch a movie on. Even 2.5 kind of sounds extreme to me, but I don't know. That's just who we are, I guess. But the thing is, man, that is on top of the other screens like iPads and smartphones that we, you know, carry around with us constantly, not to mention the tiny little screens on your wrists as well. And it's not just that prices have gone up. It's that our societal desires have increased substantially as new products that make our lives easier or that allow us to be entertained more easily come along.
Yeah, so TV screens are certainly one measure of lifestyle creep. Can't imagine many households back in the 1960s having, you know, more than one television, and just having one television was a big deal, right? But there are other indicators too, right? Cars. Not just that cars have become more expensive, but that cars
have
They have.
But, yeah.
Cars have also gotten bigger too and fancier.
Right.
There are some interesting charts, Matt, showing just how much cars have increased in size over the decades. I would say on average, looking at the stats, they're roughly a third bigger than they used to be. That means like the size of a Toyota Camry today is way bigger than the 1989 Toyota Camry, which was my first car. Like, it's probably the size of a Corolla or maybe even smaller now, that Camry that I used to own.
Yeah.
So yeah, the larger the car, the more money it's going to cost. And the fancier that car gets, the more options you have on it too. We're rolling in luxury in the vehicles we're driving. And of course, it's gotten easier to sell expensive cars to Americans because of longer and longer financing terms. So as the cars get nicer, as they get bigger, the price tag goes up, but we're able to keep our payments the same by taking on longer loan terms, which again, implodes your finances.
Yeah, do you miss your old school Camry? You had that stick shift action going on too,
dude,
right?
Such a good car. That was such a good car.
Camry's a good car, and you even mentioned like the baseline Corolla. I saw that back in 1980, a Corolla cost somewhere like around $4,000. A Corolla today, dude, cost about 40% more, and that's even adjusted for inflation as well. So even just the baseline, bare minimum vehicle has gotten a lot fancier today. And so you mentioned housing, we're talking about cars. Food as well, man, that's another big expense in our lives. And even though the cost of food has gone down over the decades, overconsumption it's quite literally a massive problem in our country. Portion sizes have gone up quite a bit at fast food restaurants over the decades. What it is that we're being served, you know, when we go out, it's far more than what our parents' generation was being served in terms of like grams and calories, you know, sodium, saltiness. What Morgan Spurlock was trying to tell us back when he released Super Size Me was totally on point.
Dude, I remember when that movie came out and it was so good. It was like a revelation, it felt like, for our society. And so many people watched it. And I think you're right. I mean, I think what he did, the lengths that he went to show us like how bad fast food is for us, was like, I don't know, we all learned a lot, but I don't know that we made that many changes in our lives based on it, because obesity continues to climb in our country too, right?
Yeah, it's affecting our health, not just what it is we're actually eating, but like it's bad for our bodies.
Yeah, as those portion sizes grow, you know, partly in thanks to what we're being served when we go out to eat, and then also our own ability just to say no, the obesity rate in the early 1960s was closer to 10%. And now it's over 40% of Americans fall into the obese category. So yeah, this lifestyle creep has not only made us more broke than we otherwise would be, but it's also made us like way more unhealthy.
Yeah, it's not only affecting the amount of money that we spend every day, but it's affecting our bodies that we inhabit every day, that we move around here on this earth. But man, across the board, you know, we've seen increases in how much money we're spending, especially for non-necessities. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the percentage of our income that we spend on non-essential items has climbed from about 20% to 50% over the past 100 years. And so despite advances in technology that has allowed for food and clothing to be produced for less money, Americans are still finding ways to spend every last dollar that they make. And so, you know, basically, lifestyle creep has taken on a life of its own in our country, and it's costing us money. But what can we do about it in our own lives? Well, we'll talk more about that right after this break. All right, we are back from the break talking about lifestyle creep. And Joel, you know, let's also mention as well that we've positioned lifestyle creep as like a purely negative concept, you know, that we should avoid. But, you know, I think there are some instances where like one could argue that it could lead to more innovation and more progress in our lives. You could say that by desiring things that cost more money, that desire could lead to higher levels of personal achievement. And so, for example, let's say that you want a vacation house, right? Maybe a house on the beach. Well, that takes a certain amount of disposable income, which means finding like ever increasingly creative ways to succeed, you know, different ways to get ahead in your career, different ways to make more money. So the way you see that in your life is, you know, you work harder, or maybe you create an incredibly successful business that solves a problem, or, you know, it provides a benefit for folks. By doing that, you've effectively made the world maybe a slightly better place, you know, by your desire to have a beach house. And so, I don't know, I feel like this is one way that you could view lifestyle creep as a slightly, you know, beneficial thing. Like, maybe it's a cop-out, but I feel like this is a way that you could talk about lifestyle creep as something that isn't completely negative. You know, on a societal level, many of us have jobs because of the different things, the different goals we have set for ourselves that we want to achieve. We are going to talk about goals a little bit later on in the episode, but we do feel that there is a difference between the unconscious increase in spending that happens to us without us realizing it, compared to the intentional goals that we set for ourselves.
Yeah, and I like too, Matt, you said a lot of us have jobs because lifestyle creep exists. On a whole, on that societal level, you're right. And like 70% of our economy revolves around consumer spending. The fact that we buy stuff, the fact that we are upgrading our lifestyles, it does contribute to the general progress of society and the welfare of us as an entire country. But yeah, there are some negatives on the personal level that really need to be discussed, because that's what we can control, right? Is our own personal spending and the way we approach lifestyle creep. Like we just went through some of the stats trying to communicate that lifestyle creep is a problem. And basically, like, if we're going to try to combat it in our own individual lives, we're going to be kind of like the salmon swimming upstream, which always impresses me. Like, I love seeing the video of the way, you know, salmon swim upstream to spawn, and even just seeing like the bears trying to catch the salmon. It's like, this is really just
that's the coolest part, right?
Yeah, like, it's
the
like
bears
artistic.
Hanging out by the river, and they're just like, fresh fish,
easy pickings. And hopefully we don't get like nabbed by a bear in the process of trying to upend lifestyle creep in our lives. But basically, we are going to be kind of, you know, going against the mainstream. We're going to be trying to live life differently, because the world around us is constantly creeping forward, enticing us to acquire more, inventing something new for us to be like, oh yeah, I need that too. So yeah, is there anything that we can do about lifestyle creep is the question that comes up, or is it just inevitable? And also too, like, Matt, what's your opinion? Like, why does lifestyle creep occur in the first place? Let's maybe start there.
Yeah, well, we feel that age is a part of it. It's pretty easy to see that our perceptions change as we get older. That is evidenced by what different age groups consider wealthy. A recent survey from Schwab, they found that different age cohorts had massively different opinions of what net worth qualified as wealthy. Millennials tend to believe that if your net worth is at least $1.4 million, that you're a wealthy individual. On the other hand, Gen Xers believe that you need at least $1.9 million to be truly wealthy. And then boomers, they say that it takes $2.5 million.
Okay, boomer.
but before you say that, you know, I think that this response has less to do with like the individuals that make up that cohort, and more about how our perceptions of wealth change as we age. You know, I'm sure you can think back to what you were doing back in college, and you thought, oh, well, I don't need this. I can sleep on someone's couch when I go traveling, when I go backpacking, that kind of thing. But as we get older, we have different standards. I do think that that's sort of a natural part of growing up. But the degree to which we sort of inflate our standards, that's what we're questioning here.
Agreed. Yeah, I think I'm 37. My standards are different than when I was 21.
Yeah, you're probably not going to be as willing to do couch surfing like you did back in the day on your West Coast trip, right?
Yeah, no, it was super fun while it lasted, but I'm probably not going to be doing couch surfing these days.
Where your buddy met his wife.
Right, exactly. And you know, there's some positive benefits to couch surfing,
yeah,
right? You
yeah.
might meet the love of your life.
That's still like the best story ever. It's like one of the best happy endings ever.
I know. They've been together a long time now.
It's awesome.
Via couch surfing. Super cool. So yeah, I mean, like, it's okay that some of your standards go up, but a big part of why our perceptions change is because of how we're comparing ourselves to others around us. And that's obviously just gotten more and more easy to do over the last decade, right? Americans were fascinated by the lifestyles of the rich and famous, or just the rich, or just the famous, right? And social media makes it easier than ever to see how other people are living, or at least get like a glimpse into how we think they're living.
Yeah.
And it's easier to constantly compare your life to others, which often, almost always, leads to dissatisfaction with your current situation because someone's got it better than you. But we never really see the full picture. And Matt, I think like oftentimes when I see that, I think that that person's happier than I am, that they're living a better life than I'm able to live. But I feel like when we step back from it, there's a powerful illusion happening there. The reality doesn't necessarily meet the picture. The happiness level of the person we're seeing on social media, it's easy to think that they're living an A-plus life and I'm living like a C-minus life. But that's just not true when it comes down to it. We're only seeing the highlight reel, as we all know, really. But mentally, it's hard for us to realize that in the moment.
Absolutely, man. Lifestyle creep happens not just because we're living in our own bubble and we've decided that, oh, this is something I want to spend more money on. It happens because we're influenced by all the different things that we see in our lives. Social media is definitely a part of that. Another big part of the reason that our perceptions change is because of what is called the hedonic treadmill. We quickly get accustomed to those little upgrades that we've made in our lives, and it's hard to go back, you know, or to even remember how it is that we used to live. So for instance, like maybe you used to mow your lawn, right? You used to rake your own leaves, but then you hired someone out to do it, and now it feels like a fixed cost. It feels like that it's not something that you can go back on. Think to yourself, like, how could I go back to you know, cutting my own grass and raking my own leaves now that you've had a taste of what it feels like to have somebody else do that for you? Especially if it's not something you enjoy doing.
Yeah, just especially don't be the person who like is sipping lemonade, watching the person do it. That's when you're really bad off. But even I agree.
Total jerk face. You're just like sitting there with your feet kicked up, you know, sipping on like a pumpkin spice latte while the leaves are falling.
Yeah.
In the fall. But I feel that it's easy for that to happen regularly with different things in our lives. Joel makes me think about that classic study on the different lottery winners. And they kind of compared those folks to folks who had been paralyzed in auto accidents. And essentially, they're trying to determine if their happiness levels were permanently affected by one of those two actions happening. And not surprisingly, since this is what we're talking about, the researchers found that winning the lottery didn't increase happiness levels, and nor did getting paralyzed in an accident decrease happiness in a substantial way. Yes, there was the immediate reaction, right? So you win the lottery, your happiness kind of level shoots up, but then it essentially returns to a baseline. And in the same way, those who were paralyzed saw a pretty dramatic decrease in their happiness, but then they were able to creep back up to that baseline. And that's what the researchers determined, right? Was that there is sort of like the set baseline level of happiness that regardless of what happens to us in life, regardless of how much money we're spending or earning, we return to that base level of happiness.
Yeah, so there's some good things about the hedonic treadmill, that when something terrible happens to us, we know that humans are able to push through difficult circumstances.
Sure, yeah.
And to bounce back and to live a fulfilling life still, even when something as hard as becoming paralyzed in an accident might happen to us. But we also know the flip side of that is that if you win the lottery or something incredible happens to you, it's nice for a minute, but really it's not going to move the needle in the long run.
Yeah, you're going to go back to just being you.
And yeah, the same is something with even as small as having someone mow your lawn, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
it feels good for a little bit, but then, well, what's the next thing I can tackle? And how can I spend more money to alleviate other problems that ail me in life? And then you quickly find yourself in this trap, right?
Yeah.
So like, what are the antidotes to lifestyle creep? I think one is that we'd all do better to lower our expectations. I feel like, Matt, that's not advice you hear very often. Whoever has given you that advice, do you just need to lower your expectations?
Just lower your standards, man.
Yeah, like in the dating world, whoever was like, hey, no, lower your expectations. You should be going for, just crummier, look for a crummier partner in general who doesn't really bring as much to the table. Like, friends don't give that advice. And, you know, most of your friends would encourage you to raise your expectations. Stop dating folks who just aren't good for you, right? But like when it comes to money, lower expectations can actually be really helpful. Basically, if you expect more from your life than you currently have, you're going to be unhappy. So what's in our mind, not the circumstances themselves, actually help determine our quality of
yep.
life. So lowering your expectations, it doesn't mean that you can't strive for great things and that you can't work hard towards making more money and making meaningful financial progress. But it is important to question the default way of thinking and to lower the expectation of what equals good in your life. For example, Matt, you mentioned TVs in the home. If we see that stat and we say, I need to be like everybody else, I need at least 2.5 TVs, that half TV might be a weird way to do it. So you're like, all right, I'm just going to round up. I'm going to go to 3. But if you decide that 1 TV is good enough for you, or maybe 0 TVs is good enough for you, lowering those expectations is going to help you save money, but it's also going to actually ensure a greater level of happiness too.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, that our expectations determine so much of how we feel and how we respond to different things that we encounter in life. And they also have an outsized impact on how we view money, how we think about, spending splurges and our views towards accumulating debt as well. I think one important thing when it comes to combating lifestyle creep is, you know, asking ourselves the question, how much is enough? In a society where consumerism has become a de facto religion, essentially, it's an important question to ask yourself. But how do you know when you've hit that point of enough? You know, how do you strike a balance between allowing yourself nicer things while saving intentionally for the future? Basically, what we're asking here is how much lifestyle creep is actually okay, and we'll actually get to that right after this break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking about lifestyle creep. And Matt, you and I, we're all about striking a solid balance here on How to Money.
Uh-huh.
We're not against owning things, right? Like, we're not about that monastic existence. Some people might be into that, but that's not really how we roll. We're also not even anti-beach house. Because that's a great band, right?
Oh, I thought you were going to take it in like the vacation direction, but yes, actually, it's been a long time since I've listened to Zebra.
Yeah, they have some good songs, some good albums. Yeah.
But, chill wave, but right? Yeah, the kind of genre.
Yeah, totally, super chill. But I'm also not even against somebody wanting to own their own beach house. Like, that's fine if that's your goal. But really, the old saying, the more stuff you own, the more that stuff will own you, has some real truth to it. But it's important to not let lifestyle creep happen by accident. You know, we're all about making purposeful choices. So it's important to choose which areas of your life you want to spend more money on purpose, and then actively work to spend less in other areas that don't mean as much. And I feel like on purpose is really the key phrase there, because it needs to be this really conscious decision.
Yep. Yeah. Balance is crucial, but how much lifestyle creep is okay? Most folks don't want to continue to live like a college student once they are out living in the real world, once they have a legitimate paycheck coming in. Eating ramen 5 times a week isn't nearly as nice in your 30s as it was when you were 20.
That's true. It almost felt like a delicacy when you were in your 20s.
Well, now we just kind of, we've lifestyle crept into the boutique, high-end alkaline noodle ramen, you know, like the nice noodles. But, you know, the same thing is true for drinking incredibly cheap beer. It has its place here and there, but for the most part, we like the nicer stuff these days. So how can we have some lifestyle creep, the good kind that allows us to increase our standard of living while affording some of the comforts that are worth pursuing without hopping on that hedonic treadmill and without crushing our finances, right? Like, that's the question we're asking here. And also, without getting into a cycle of constantly needing to increase our lifestyle to be happy, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, that's a problem, and it's a train that's hard to stop rolling once you're on that track. And so, yeah, there's a few ways we think that you can do that, that you can increase your standard of living when it's appropriate, but avoid lifestyle creep at the same time. And let's talk about a few ways you can do that. The first is to budget according to your goals. And this is obviously just huge, right? We don't want you to budget according to the ways that everybody around you is living.
Right.
If you do that, you're never going to have enough, because, you know, your one neighbor's got a nicer car, the other neighbor's got a nicer house, the other neighbor's going on cooler vacations. It's like a never-ending cycle, because you can't
do all of them.
You can't live up to all those things.
Nor will you necessarily be happy by doing any of them.
Right, yeah. Even if you did live up to all those things and didn't find yourself in more debt, you might not be happier. You probably wouldn't be happier. You really need to budget for your specific goals. And it's totally okay if other folks aren't on board, right, with how you're living your life. It's your money and it's your life. So do what you want. Do what's going to make you happy. Do what's right for your income and for the way you want to live. So this is where there's some crossover between setting goals and then aspiring for different things in life, like we talked about earlier. But identifying that why behind your money is just such an important part of identifying your goals, and then being able to budget for those things as well, like making sure that the money is there to actually achieve those goals. That's a crucial part of avoiding lifestyle creep.
That's right. You got to make that plan. And then counter to that as well is intentionally choose some areas in your budget that you don't want to increase at all, right? So for us, transportation, that's one of those areas where we've chosen to no longer make upgrades. And since we've resolved that no more money is going in that direction, it forces us to live within those parameters. So we're not necessarily looking at the next cool electric car that kind of catches my fancy. Even though I kind of like following them, I've decided that that's not going to be a part of our life. Kate's on board with that. I'm on board with that. And so we've set low expectations for what we'll be spending on transportation costs for our family moving forward. And it's easier now to be content now that we've made that conscious decision. To us, it doesn't feel like deprivation when you've chosen that path on purpose. So choose, you know, an area or two of your budget that you'll expand, say, when your income goes up. Like perhaps adding $20 to that craft beer fund, but then choose others that you want to specifically keep fixed at a low level.
Yeah, I think intentionally keeping something low in your budget and not allowing it to inflate in any way, form, or fashion is definitely one way to help prevent lifestyle creep in your life. Another, too, would be to make gradual changes instead of maybe the quick, big ones. Because, Matt, I think that, you know, the way the hedonic treadmill works, those smaller and more incremental changes just aren't going to hurt your finances in the same way that a more bigger, more expensive shift will. But oftentimes, like, we can realize a similar amount of value or benefit by making just a small tweak. For instance, you might decide that it's important for your family to have help cleaning your house, if that's something you've prioritized. And that's okay. But don't go from all DIY, right? House cleaning every Saturday as a family, to having a cleaning company come out once a week, and you guys aren't cleaning at all anymore. Instead, maybe have them come once a month, and then you do the other 3 weeks of cleaning, and you know, continue to do some of that regular cleaning yourselves. I think, you know, the incremental change is not only going to cost you less, but it also makes that new spending line item feel a bit more special. The baseline isn't being raised to the same degree, so instead of going from like 0 to 100 overnight, maybe you know, go from 0 to 5 and kind of like bump it up in small amounts. See how that spending decision, that increased amount of spending, that new choice is treating you, and be willing to go back too if it's not making enough of a difference in your life.
And one other thing, if you're cleaning your house yourself, don't save it for the weekends on a Saturday. Saturday is your day to go out and have some fun. Do it on Mondays. That's how we make Mondays suck extra hard. That's vacuum day in our household.
You basically always have a case of the Mondays.
No, only on vacuum day.
Which is Mondays.
Which is Monday. And another way that we can keep lifestyle creep in check is to hang out with folks who have similar goals, right? The people you surround yourself with will impact your ability to be content, right? And to avoid lifestyle creep in a pretty big way. And keep in mind, we're not telling you to ditch all your current friends to go find some new monk friends, right? Although that would likely help you to cut down on some unnecessary spending.
If you are going to find monk friends, you got to go with the Trappist monks, because those guys brew great beer at the same time. I will say, like, I would totally be down with
that. That is a lifestyle I can see us embracing. It's just like, wait a minute, those monks live very simply, very frugally, but they drink good beer.
Yeah, exactly. I want some of those like St. Bernardus monk friends, you know?
That would be awesome. I mean, we're joking, but do know that, you know, the people that you hang out with the most are going to have a major impact on how you view quote unquote normal life. And so try to find a few close friends that have similar values to you, including the way that they view their money, including some of the different savings goals that they might have set for themselves. They may not be exactly the same, but if they're within the same vein as what you're trying to set out to achieve, then that could significantly help.
Yeah, and I know, you know, we probably talk smack about social media on the reg while also being on social media, right?
So true.
But it's best done in moderation at most, right? And so, you know, one thing that you can do, Matt, I think it's important to have real life human friends close by where you live that do share similar values to you, right? But also too, one of the only great things about social media, in my opinion, is the ability to connect with people that have similar values to you online, and to form groups of people that are able to share their wins and ask questions. And that's exactly what the How to Money Facebook group has become. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people in there asking questions, helping each other out, and really getting motivated by what other people are doing. And so I got to say, surrounding yourself by some of those people in the online world can be helpful too. As you're checking your feed, maybe, and you know, you're seeing the sweet vacation that a friend took, at the same time in that feed, you might see somebody asking a question about how to put more of their money away in their Roth IRA.
Yeah.
And so it's at least like diffusing maybe some of the angst that you might be feeling on social media and actually propelling you towards your goal. So yeah, we highly suggest you checking that group out. But really, yeah, friends in real life are crucial too.
Yeah, totally. We would also recommend for folks to get excited about future you, right? And so investing more doesn't have to be done only out of drudgery, right? It can be a way to get excited about the years where you are going to actually be able to have more financial freedom. So for instance, I have no idea what I'm going to be like in 30 years, because that just feels like, seriously, a long way
off. I can make some predictions.
We've done the face app before. We have seen what we look like when we're going to be 80 or 90. But continuing to make that connection to saving more and investing, being something that you're doing for future you, that can really help you to feel more connected to the process. And I think it'll make you less likely to spend all of that money that's coming in today.
Yeah, I think the future you thing is really important, Matt. I think sometimes when we're just saving for quote unquote retirement, it feels like we're saving for somebody else, or it feels like we're putting money somewhere where we're never going to see it. But it's not true. Like, yeah. We are saving for our future selves, but it can be hard to make that visceral connection and to actually realize that we're saving for future us. Even though we know it in our brains, it's hard to connect that to like the emotional side of our being, right?
Yeah, I feel like oftentimes it can feel like, especially when it's coming out of your paycheck, I think it can feel like just something that's going off towards something that you're never going to see, sort of like taxes, right? It's something that the government takes, and theoretically, it builds roads and bridges and other programs.
Not just theoretically, it does. It does. In actuality.
I mean, but like a very small percentage, right, actually goes to roads. But I think it can also feel that the money that's going away towards your 401k can also feel like that money, where it's just something, you know, that who knows when it is that you'll ever be able to actually drive on that road, right? Like who knows when you'll ever actually be able to experience what it feels like to be retired. But keep in mind that is your money. That is money that is going to fund your lifestyle whenever it is that you do choose to retire.
Yeah, and the more you're able to sock away, the earlier you're going to not have to work in order to continue to make money. You're going to be able to be financially independent, and that's a great goal.
Or the more beach houses you can own, if that's your thing.
That's right. Or the more beach house albums. That's a much more approachable way to spend your money.
Yeah. But
I think, Matt, in some ways, lifestyle creep is inevitable, right? Inflation plays a legitimate role in the things that we buy, which do cost more over time, as we described earlier in the episode. It's hard to undo some of what's coming out of Pandora's box when it comes to the way consumer goods are changing in our country. And as societal expectations have changed, the goods and services that businesses offer. For instance, the Toyota Camry that we described from the early 90s was a good bit smaller than the 2022 model. There's nothing we can do about that. Like, we can't say, no, go back and make me the smaller thing that costs less money, because that's just not realistic. But there is a whole lot that we can do when it comes to changing our perceptions of what it means to have enough. Just because the average home size has more than doubled from what it used to be doesn't mean that we have to aspire to have that size of a home. While home prices are inevitably rising and will continue to rise over the years, lifestyle creep is something that we can severely limit in our own lives. And it's not just going to save us money and make us more financially secure. We truly believe it's going to make us happier too. Those lower expectations, actually setting limits for ourselves below maybe even what we can afford, is ultimately going to provide greater freedom, a greater sense of security, greater happiness. It's a win-win-win. It's just harder to do in reality. And so that's why we wanted to talk about this today, lay out some principles for how we can prevent lifestyle creep from just kind of, you know, running amok.
That is correct, man. Let's shift gears, take it back to the beer that we're sharing, or that we are each enjoying on this episode. And you and I are both drinking a Hobnail, which is a wild Canadian blueberry Midwestern fruit tart. And this is by Urban Artifact, sent to us by Sandra. Sandra, thank you for donating this beer and last episode's beer to the show. Joel, what were your thoughts on this one, man?
Okay, first things first. This beer is named Hobnail, which makes me think of Larry Munson. Oh, yeah. Who?
How do you know about Larry Munson?
Okay, so I worked for the station that broadcast all the Georgia Bulldogs games, the radio station. Yeah. So Larry Munson was the Georgia Bulldogs radio announcer for the football team.
My alma mater. Yeah.
And we'll have to link to his call of that game in the show notes.
Was that against Tennessee?
I think it was. Yeah. And I don't remember who it was that stepped on someone's face with a Hobnail boot, but that's how he called the game.
It's a classic.
It's a classic call.
Classic line, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes.
Very nice.
That's obviously the first thing it made me think of, being someone who grew up, you know, in the state of Georgia. But onto the beer. It was rich. It was sweet. It was slightly tart. There was a lot of blueberry action going on, for sure. I will say, too, it almost kind of tasted a little like grape juice, almost like the communion grape juice you might get. That's not a bad thing. I like the communion grape juice. I'm just saying.
You're saying that because it's purple, I think.
It is purple.
Very dark purple. And so, like, I feel like if I were to have blindfolded you and then been like, drink this, Joel, and said it in a creepier voice, but like, Joel, drink this. I feel like you wouldn't have said it was maybe as sweet, but because it really does have that classic, like, grape juice color to it.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it doesn't taste as sweet as it looks. Like, so it says wild Canadian blueberries. And when Kate and I were up in Maine for our anniversary a number of years ago, when we went to Acadia National Park, there are just wild blueberries everywhere. And they're not these fat, juicy, plump blueberries that you pick up at the grocery store that are like basically like grapes. They're much smaller and they're much more tart. And that's what this beer tastes like to me. And so for that reason, it tastes just more tart and more acidic to me than kind of like a, I guess, like more of a classic blueberry beer or something like that. But also, I can't help but to point out the artwork on here. It's kind of got like some old school, what it looks like, mining equipment? I don't know.
Looks like some climbing paraphernalia, too.
Is it climbing? Oh, I guess so. There's like screws and goggles. I don't know if it's climbing or mining.
No, that's totally climbing. It's got the crampons and the goggles and axe. Like, yeah.
Well, what is that thing? I've never seen that.
I don't know. I'm not a climber, but
adventuring. There's like this tool on here that I've never seen. But otherwise, yeah, you're probably right. Either way, it makes you think of the outdoors where wild blueberries grow. I guess this is what you have to put on back in the day if you're going to actually gather these wild blueberries. But yeah, this was a really delicious beer. I got to say, a quite refreshing beer after a little bike ride that you and I actually had right before we recorded this.
That's true. Yeah, a bike ride before podcasting is always good, and before beer drinking. So I encourage everyone to, bike ride before you drink a beer. Yeah. It feels like you earned that
yes.
beer then, you know? It's a better way to do it.
Evie and I recently, like on a daddy-daughter date, we biked to this donut shop that's kind of on the other side of the park, and you have to go up quite a few steep hills. And I told her, I was like, Evie, you're really gonna earn it, you know, by biking here. Like, it makes the reward of a sweet treat all that much more delicious.
That's true. Yeah. All right, well, that's gonna do it for this episode. For folks that want show notes for it, just go to our website at howtomoney.com.
And maybe you've been listening to the show for a while now, but you have not yet left us a review. We would love it if you were to run over to Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you're listening to your podcast these days. Leave us a solid review over there, and thank you in advance. Those positive reviews help others to find the show. It helps others to figure out how to money 3 times a week. And we want all folks out there to make sure that they're doing smarter things with their personal finances.
That's our goal. All right. Well, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.